Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, March 3rd, 2024. My name is Melanie C., a recovered compulsive overeater from Canby, Oregon. The share ID numbers for Friday, March 1st, 2024 are the following. The 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study share ID number is 21185. 21,185. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study number is 21186, 21,186. This morning, A Vision for You presents Wrestling Grizzly Bears is a Bad Idea. The title, Wrestling Grizzly Bears is a Bad Idea, for today's presentation is a vivid and powerful metaphor for the struggle against addiction and the first step of acknowledging powerlessness and unmanageability in our lives, whether abstinent or not, untreated. This presentation will examine the core of what it means to face an addiction, an unruly, destructive force like a wild animal that has been tearing us apart, leaving us beaten and weary. Yet we get back up and fight. The imagery of tilting at windmill further enriches this narrative, illustrating the futile struggle against an imaginary enemy, only to realize that the true battle lies within us. This aligns with the essence of step one, where we can become unmanageable, that our attempts to control our addiction has been as ineffective as fighting imaginary giants. The speaker is well suited to address this harsh reality head on from experience, acknowledging the exhaustion from decades of this internal conflict. Yet there's a message of hope intertwined with the acknowledgement of defeat. Step one is not just about defeat and admitting that. It's about opening the door to a new beginning, recognizing that while we may be powerless on our own, acknowledging this fact is the first step out of the chaos. This idea of needing to admit, I do not know how enough to fix this thing, underscores the necessity of humility in the recovery process. It's a call to set aside ego, to admit that our methods and knowledge are insufficient, and to open ourselves to new ways of healing. It's a step that requires not just humility, but also a degree of humiliation, a willingness to face the uncomfortable truths about ourselves and our condition. It sounds like today's presentation will be a profound exploration of the foundational principle that underpins the entire recovery journey. By framing step one in such stark, relatable terms, the speaker aims to illuminate the path forward, not through continued struggle or self-destruction, but through surrender, acceptance, and the humility to seek help beyond oneself. This step will, while daunting, is portrayed as a crucial starting point for genuine change and healing. A Vision for You is pleased and grateful to have today, all the way from Oklahoma, a true companion of recovery and a friend here for many years at A Vision for You, constantly offering experience, strength, and hope on the line to support the community of the Big Book students each day that we meet together. So without further ado, please help me welcome warmly to the line today, Craig F. from Oklahoma. Welcome, welcome, Craig.
Well, thank you, Melanie. Thank you. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I'm humbled by it. I'm so glad to be here and be asked to give this talk. I had volunteered to do it, to do a talk about this, thinking that I would have, you know, 4 or 5 months to get ready, and there was a cancellation, excuse me, I'm just getting over a bronchial infection. There was a cancellation and asked to fill in, and so maybe that's good because it gives me less time to worry. I stew a little bit about these things. So let's get started. The idea for this talk began when I heard for maybe the thousandth time someone say that they were struggling. They'd said, I'm struggling with my food. And I think that most of us have said that at one point or another, a lot of us. I know I have. You know, I was struggling. I'm struggling with my food. And as if we're saying something pretty profound, and in a way we are, you know. We've all, most of us have come from, you know, diet backgrounds. You know, we've tried lots of different things to control our obsession, and I'm gonna have to feed the dog or something here to get rid of them. They see me talking and they think I'm talking to them. Anyway, we come from a background where we did pay and ways and we did all these other diets, and we fought this food, and we fought this food obsession for years, and we got in the habit of thinking that we should struggle, you know, that we needed to struggle, we needed to fight this beast, and yet. You know, we get to program, and we were handed this novel idea that says surrender. It says I'm powerless over food. We admitted we were powerless over food. Our lives had become unmanageable, and that is a hard thing to accept sometimes. You know, I would like to think, you know, that I am pretty efficient at some of the things I do. You know, I'm good at my job. I've been productive over a long period of time doing my job. It's a struggle at times, and I'm proud of the fights that I win, you know. And then I get to food, and I can't win this fight. No matter what I do, sooner or later, and the older I get, the sooner it became, I'm going to lose. I'm going to lose the struggle. So this phrase, I'm struggling, contains its own answer, if we'll think about it. You know, you're failing because you're struggling. You're failing because you haven't surrendered, you know. And I always try to tell people, and I get sponsees that'll call and say, I'm struggling. And I say, if you're powerless, why are you struggling? You know, the grizzly bear metaphor starts with, I was in Alaska with my dad when he was still alive. He was in his 80s, and he always, my mom was not in good enough health to go with him, so I accompanied him gladly, and we went to Alaska, and we did the Denali tour, and we were in a bus going up the mountain into Denali, and there was a mama grizzly bear, and she had triplets, and that is a rare thing, you know. Two is rare, three is really rare. And so the bus stopped and everybody gets out, and you know, I'm in my 50s and the youngest person on the bus. And we're looking down this slope to this creek, and about 100 yards away is the mama bear and these three little grizzly bear cubs, and they are very cute. And they're wrestling and they're playing and everybody's in and on. And I look around and say, that grizzly bear can cover that distance between here and there in about 5 seconds. And we've got 30 geriatric tourists here, none of whom are most are walking with canes and not walking very well, and they're all going to be scrambling to get back on the bus. And I turned to my dad and I said I'm not comfortable with this. Let's get back on the bus, and we can see it from there. And so my dad and I got on the bus, and we no more than got on the bus. And that mama grizzly bear took notice of us and charged that hill. And she did. She closed that distance between the where she was and where the people were all standing in just like 5 seconds. I mean, it was, and these people were scrambling to get on the bus. And I'm at the top of the stairs trying to pull them on. And it was... it was frightening. It was scary. And we all got the bear, thank God, stopped short and just growled at us. And everybody got on the bus. And it was a lot of pictures were taken. A lot of hearts were running pretty fast, and people were scared. And the point, by telling this story, one of the things I want to point out is that not one of us had ever fought a grizzly bear. Not one of us had ever wrestled a grizzly bear in our lives. But we all knew it was a bad idea, you know. Everybody, we didn't have to experience being defeated by a grizzly bear to know the danger that grizzly bear posed to us if it would have got caught up with anybody. And so even without that experience, we were frightened enough to get on the bus, to get where the grizzly bear couldn't get to us. And you know, we come to this program with a lot of experience. Most of us have come to this program and we fought our disease, whether it's compulsive eating or bulimia in the weight gaining form, or whether it's bulimia or anorexia. We come with a lot of experience of having tried to fight the disease and have lost over and over and over again. And yet we continue to fight, you know? And so when we say I'm struggling with food, we're saying we haven't learned a lesson. We've gone through all these experiences, but yet we haven't accepted the lesson that we're powerless. The other story I always tell my sponsees when we're dealing with step one is that if Mike Tyson invited me to get in the ring with him, I'd be stupid to do that. Mike Tyson would beat the thunder out of me and would bite my ear off probably, and leave me a bloody mess in the corner, because Mike Tyson, I'm powerless over Mike Tyson. But if I'm standing there outside that ring, and Muhammad Ali in his prime, I'm a Muhammad Ali fan, I thought he was the greatest fighter that ever took to the ring in a lot of ways. You can argue about that later if you care to. But if Muhammad Ali said, "Craig, stand aside, I've got this, I'll take care of it for you," wouldn't I be foolish not to let Muhammad Ali step in the ring for me? Wouldn't it be better for me if I stood aside? When it comes time to struggle with food, when it comes time to fight this food, we have somebody that is an entity that will step in the ring for us and fight the food for us, you know? And of course that is your higher power. And just like Ali step in the ring for me, it is in all reality foolish for me not to step aside and say, let's let God handle this. Let's let my higher power handle this. On page 45 of the big book, it says, "Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Obviously, but where were you to find this power?" Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So the book's already telling us in We Agnostics in 45 that we're powerless and who that power is, and that lack of power is our dilemma. You know, so when I say, I'm struggling, all I'm saying is I haven't let God fight the battle for me yet. I haven't stepped aside. I haven't accepted the help that's been offered, because in my ego, in my image of myself, I still think somehow that I can win out, that I can beat Mike Tyson and wrestle that grizzly bear, and so I'm not going to let somebody else step in the ring and take over for me. So that can be pabulum. You know, that whole statement could be taken as pabulum. It makes us feel good to say to a newcomer, stop struggling and surrender. But without practical instruction, without somebody telling us exactly how to do that, then we're simply, well, Melanie said tilting at windmills. We are fighting a fantasy battle. You know, how do I surrender? What does powerlessness look like? And how do I surrender? First of all, in order for me to surrender, I have to get to the point that I admit that I'm powerless. I have to take an honest look back at all the times that I wrestled grizzly bears. I have to look back at all the times that I fought this food and accept the fact that each and every one of those was ultimately a failure. That I have not been able to on my own. You know, what I want to do is look back and say, well, I did this diet and I lost 50 pounds, and I did that diet and I lost 70 pounds, and I did this diet and I lost 40 pounds. But what I really need to do is look back and say, but yet every one of those diets ended. Every one of those periods of relief, of reprieve ended. And for me, every one of them ended with putting the weight back on with a bonus. And, you know, I struggled and I fought this for over 20 years on my own. And during that time, my weight yo-yoed from, you know, starting out at my high school playing weight at 220 until I walked in my first OA meeting at 410. And even though I lost the weight in OA, I didn't truly surrender. I didn't truly acknowledge my powerlessness. And I didn't truly acknowledge my powerlessness because I didn't truly work the steps. I did what I thought I had to do to get the weight off so I could play, so I could look good, so it wouldn't affect my love life or my business life. But then I would relapse each time. Even in program, and so that when life got more than I could handle in relapse, I hit 520 pounds and found no permanent relief because I hadn't found that gear. I hadn't found that place that said, I'm powerless over food. I'm powerless over grizzly bears. Powerless over food. And because I hadn't found that place and because I hadn't truly surrendered, I hadn't truly accepted the program of recovery that's offered up in this book. You know, and part of me wants to blame other people. You know, I always want to blame somebody else if I can. And, you know, that wasn't what they were teaching us. You know, that wasn't what I'd go to meetings and that wasn't what I was hearing. Well, there were people talking it. It was there. I just wasn't hearing it, you know, whether it was being taught loud enough or not taught loud enough isn't the point. I wasn't ready to hear it. And so today I think it's important. One of the reasons I think it's important to be clear, to be to the point with our presentation is that people want to hear the message of recovery. They may not be ready to accept it, but as long as they hear it, sooner or later it will break through. And so I think it's important to continue to put that forward. Alcohol was the great persuader, the big book says on page 48. It says, in this respect, alcohol was the great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one will be prejudiced for as long as some of us were. Food was a great persuader, you know. I hope that some of you won't be as prejudiced about the solution as I once was. But nonetheless, sooner or later, alcohol, food, my alcoholic foods beat me into submission. The weight beat me into submission. The lack of long-term success, the lack of self-acceptance, the lack of self-love beat me into submission. So what we're getting to, what we're moving towards here is this idea that we're not moving towards self-reliance. This isn't a program that moves us to self-reliance. That's kind of the bad news. You know, I'm a self-reliant kind of guy. You know, country boy, give me a gun and a one-eyed dog and I can live off the land kind of guy, you know. Not anymore, but I always thought I could. The big book tells us a different, gives us a different picture. On page 68, it tells us about self-reliance versus God-reliance. Page right. Yeah, the whole page is about self-reliance. We never apologize for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. Back on page 52. Following the bedevilments, the bedevilments are, to me, the definition of the insanity. You know, it's the definition of what it's like to live in the insanity of the food. We had trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution to these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. Then it goes on to say that when we became compulsive overeaters, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or God is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? I encourage you to read that whole section in We Agnostics, because it talks about moving from this idea of self-dependence, of wrestling with the grizzly bear ourselves, to coming to a position of God-reliance. So what does surrender look like? Simple but not easy. The big book tells us it's simple but not easy. So in practical terms, what it looks like is get a sponsor. You know, lots of people sponsor with different formats and different agendas, but get a sponsor. You know, there is something about the humility of calling somebody, for me, every day, and saying and being accountable. You know, if I'm going to fight the grizzly bear on my own, I don't want to be accountable to anybody else. You know, if I'm going to think that I'm somehow restored to power, then I don't want to call somebody every day. I don't want to humble myself to seek the advice of others, to seek the input of others. You know, that means that I have to reduce my ego. You know, that I heard early on that the steps were an ego reducing process, and it's a process that reduces my dependence on my ego and increases my dependence on my God. It reduces my dependence on what I have of myself, and reduces my constant thought of myself, and moves me to a place where I can start to think about how I can be of service to God and my fellows. So get a sponsor, work quickly. You know, the freedom from food obsession is promised in step 10. And one time I was working the steps before I got to Vision, and I was working the steps with a sponsor, and I was six months looking for the right pen and paper to write my fourth step out on. You know, ridiculous. I went to a meeting. It was called a big meeting. It was an AA big meeting. In this AA big meeting, it's once a month here in town, and they bring in conference level speakers, and they brought in a guy who had sobered up in Dr. Bob's house. And I was excited to hear him, you know, excited to hear what he had to say. And the guy talked about how he had drank on a Thursday, and he went to a meeting on a Friday night. And this is my recollection of it. I wish I had a recording. But he went to a meeting on Friday night, and he heard somebody talk. And when he was done, two guys grabbed him and drug him off to a corner. And they sat down, and they said, well, you're here. Now they were still working the Oxford group steps. But they said you're here, and that must mean you know that you have a problem with alcohol, that you're powerless. And the guy said, yeah, I do, and my life's messed up. And they said, do you think God can help you? And he said, yes, I think God can help me. And he said, are you willing to turn your life over to God? And they prayed together, sitting at the table. And after they prayed, they took out a napkin and a soft pointed pen. And they said, okay, now we're going to do your fourth step. And they said, so tell us who you resent, what you fear, what you've done. And he started to tell them. And they wrote it down. They took the notes, and he told them, you know, he told them about stealing stuff, and he told them that he'd stolen things in order to have nice clothes to wear. It was the Depression. Excuse me. And he told them that he lied a lot, that he told people lies about how well he was doing because he wanted to look prosperous. So he stole things to look prosperous, and he told lies so he could look prosperous because his ego needed to look good to the people around him. And those are the things I remember him talking about. But what impressed me more than anything was he did his fourth step right then and there. And out of that, they made a list of people that he had stolen from and people he'd harmed. And that was Friday night, and Saturday he was out on the streets making amends. And he'd been sober ever since. And this was in the mid-90s. And, you know, that had occurred back before World War II, so sometimes in the 30s, probably. And he had been sober ever since. And I sat there amazed, thinking that, you know, I had looked at all these bars, charts, and graphs, and I had looked at all these forms that people give you and the questionnaires they give you, and I had like I said, spent a lot of time looking for a pen and pencil, a pen and paper that would be just right to do that fourth step on, because I'm a perfectionist at heart. And truthfully, because I was avoiding doing the step. And I was still in the disease. I was still eating. I hadn't plowed forward. So, you know, the next piece of advice, if we're going to call it advice, is move forward. You know, we sometimes, because I'm a perfectionist, I don't want to move forward, because I'm afraid that if I move forward and it doesn't work quite right, or it doesn't work my way, that I'll be dissatisfied. So it's better to sit there and think about how it's going to look than it is to go ahead and just make the mistakes, you know, learn from the mistakes. So what's surrender look like? You know, surrender looks like moving forward, being willing to make mistakes, being willing to take risks as I move forward. So get a sponsor, work quickly, move forward. The next thing that I think is important is that quite often people want to make a start and they want to make a beginning, but they hold on to alcoholic foods. They hold on to foods that they either know are triggering them or they suspect might be triggering them, because my God, who wants to give up apples, you know? And I don't mean apples or everybody's alcoholic food, but, you know, I didn't want to give up bananas. You know, I love bananas. They're soft in there and they're sweet. And, you know, but I had to look at it and I had to say, when I had bananas in the house and I was, you know, and I would relapse, the bananas would be gone quickly. And so, you know, I thought that surely can't be a problem, but I knew it was, you know, and we hold on sometimes to foods that are questionable, or we are, you know, for a long time in the regular OA rooms, we would hear the fourth or fifth ingredient rule, you know, that I could eat sugar as long as it was the fifth ingredient. Now, you may be able to eat sugar. This isn't Sugar Eaters Anonymous. A lot of us can't. But if it is a problem, if it's a trigger, if it's an allergic food for me, I can't eat it even if it's the 25th ingredient in a food. I have to give that up completely. I have to surrender it completely. If flour is a white flour particularly is a problem for you, it is for me. I can't say I can eat it as long as it's mixed with brown flour, or I can't say I can eat it as long as it's the 10th ingredient. I have to give up all allergic foods, you know, because you're going to be back in the struggle. You're going to be back if you tickle that allergy even a little bit every day, it's gonna show, you know, it's gonna show in terms of cravings, and you're gonna be back to white knuckling things. You know, I hear on the line so much people struggling with gum, you know, and it's a you know, hard thing. Sugarless gum, surely, I can't chew gum because I have some dental issues that make it, you know, bad for me to chew gum. But, you know, if chewing gum is a struggle for you, you have to take a look at that and surrender that. And you know, I recently had a sponsee who's probably on the line, and I'm not going to say his name, but we finally realized that carrots were a problem for him. He craved carrots. Carrots had become very sexy to him, and carrots having just enough of the right kind of sugar in them that they were triggering him. They were one of his allergic foods. And you know, that idea, that definition of allergic foods varies from person to person. But the fact is, most of us know, we know what those allergic foods are for us, or we can figure it out pretty quickly. You know, the book tells us to, it tells alcoholics to step over to the closest bar and, you know, take a drink. And, you know, I always thought, man, that's dangerous. Man, is that dangerous, telling alcoholics step over to the bar and have a drink. And if you can put it down, you're probably not alcoholic. Well, step over to the kitchen, you know, and ask yourself, what's sexy? You know, what is it that I crave? What is it that I won't give up? And when you answer the question honestly about what is it I don't want to give up, you probably already know that it's something that's causing you problems, causing you a trigger. And so getting that clean food plan that's free of ingredients and substances that trigger your allergy, that is as important as anything in order to stop struggling. You know, where we struggle is where we struggle is where we're trying to control things that are beyond our control. We're trying to control things. We're trying to fight grizzly bears that can't be fought, you know. But the advantage we have here is we have experience with these different foods. We have lots of experience to draw on if we're honest. You know, I didn't have any experience fighting grizzly bears. I had to guess that grizzly bear could kill me. And therefore, I needed to get on the bus and get out of the way. But with food, I've had a lifetime of struggling. I've had a lifetime of knowing how my diets ended, of knowing what it was that set me off, what it was that triggered me. And that information's all right there if I can be honest with myself. And if it's not right there, there's ways of experimenting. If you're having trouble and you suspect something is causing you problems, give it up. And if you hear that word, give it up, and it makes you panic inside, then what does the panic tell you? You know, what does the panic mean? The panic means you don't want to give it up. It means you're craving it. It means it's become too sexy for you. And, you know, I'm older now. I'm 72, and I never thought I'd live to be this old. I did. And quite often my nutritionist makes changes to my food plan, and I have to give up food. I need less food today than I needed 10 years ago, you know. And because I have to give up food, if I'm clawing, if something has claw marks on it, you know, we all joke about it. Everything I've ever gave up, I had claw marks on it. If I'm putting claw marks on it, the claw marks themselves are a message, you know. They're a message that I'm not... I'm not fully surrendered, that I'm still thinking I have some control, that I'm still thinking that I have power in this game. And once I give that idea up, I'm more capable of making those changes. I'm more capable of accepting that now it's time to stop eating beef, you know, or whatever it is. I had to give up. I was eating a small steak every evening. It was handy. It was good. I liked steak. Guess what? When I gave it up, my weight loss picked up again. And picked up steam. My nutritionist was right. You know, it's fatty food, and I was getting something out of it. But recovery today for me looks like give it up because I need to give it up, and don't hold on. You know, don't cling to anything too tightly. Don't leave claw marks on things. But for the newcomer, I'm not asking you to give up steak. I'm not suggesting that you give up steak. What I'm suggesting is that you look at the things that have triggered you in the past, that you look for those allergic foods, that you look for the ways your diet's ended, and you avoid those things, that you don't allow yourself to be drugged back in to the fight. You know, that's what allergic foods will do. They'll drag you back in to the fight, and then you think you're fighting again. And when you're fighting, you're not in surrender. You haven't got to this point where you've come to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. That it's God-reliance, not self-reliance. It's God-reliance that's going to get you through to the next stage. It's going to get you through and be the basis for your recovery, God-reliance. And, you know, there are issues you're going to face, maybe, you know, the nature of the God you believe in, what you believe. And I'm going to encourage you at that point to set all that aside, to say simply, do you believe or are you willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself that can restore you to sanity? That's all you need to believe to move from step one to step two. And you don't have to define God. You don't have to be able to paint a picture of him or her. You don't have to any great theological or philosophical arguments for or against God. You simply have to say, I believe there's a power greater than myself. And that power greater than myself will reveal themselves to me as time goes on, if I'm open to listen, if I'm open to life's lessons. And, you know, and that power greater than myself will take over the struggle, that I don't have to struggle anymore. That just like I said, Muhammad Ali would step in the ring and fight Mike Tyson, that this power greater than myself is going to step in the ring and take on the food. Because if I don't let that happen, the food will whip me. It may not bite my ear off, but it will whip me. And, you know, this power greater than myself can whip grizzly bears. It can whip Mike Tyson. And it can whip the food, you know. And that's all I need to know, that it has my interest at heart, to me, that it's a kind and benevolent higher power. And beyond that, I don't need to know a whole lot. I just need to surrender and quit struggling. So anyway, I pretty much through with what I had to share. And so with that, Melanie, I'm going to pass. Thank you. Melanie, are you there?
Yeah. Melanie, press star one. Ooh. Melanie, press star one, please.
Melanie, star one.
Well, goodness gracious, something happened there. Am I able to be heard now?
Yes,
you are.
Oh, I was, okay, well, let's just keep moving on here this morning. Good morning. Thank you for all the help. to assist me in having my voice here heard again this morning. Thank you, Craig. Thank you. The imagery was fantastic to be able to follow along chronologically what you were working with, and you know the size of that bear is three times what we've ever seen in a brown bear. So thank you very, very much. It was clearly visible and palpative, I'll tell you that. Oh, so we're going to get Craig's information so you can hear more about this at the end of the meeting once the recording stops. So stay with us for that. The share ID for today, Sunday, March 3rd, 2024, is 21188, 21188. So here we go, Craig. The lines are going to be open for questions. If you have a question for Craig, please unmute your phone by pressing star 1 on your phone keypad. Offer your first name, the first letter of your last name, and your state. And then immediately upon asking your question, would you please press star 1 again to remute your line? Who would like to ask Craig a question this morning?
Kristen R.
And KP.
Kristen R. Jason KP.
Tamara C.
Tamara C.
Lee H. from Tennessee.
Lee H.
Paul P. from Rhode Island.
Paul P.
Felicia F.
Felicia.
Diane G. Canada.
Diane G. Well, that's a good lineup. Let's go with that and see how we get the mix up there, and we can offer other opportunities if time allows. So let's go with this lineup. Kristen P., Jason K.P., Tamara C., Lee H., Paul P., Felicia S., and Diane G. First up with your question. Are you ready? Kristen P.
Hi, this is Kristen R. I'm a compulsive overeater in Virginia.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
That's all right. Craig, you mentioned going through the steps quickly. With your sponsees, what does that look like for you? Do you have specific time parameters, or how does it work to go through it quickly? Thanks.
Okay, thank you. You know, it varies a little bit with people, whether they've been through the steps before, whether they're whether they're new, whether they're coming from another program, whether they're fast studies. I sponsored a man one time who couldn't. I had to read with him because he couldn't read, and so that took longer. But for the average, normal, typical person, it looks like 2 weeks at the most, maybe quicker. And we do the doctor's opinion. I like to do in a couple of days. I do it. Have him read it 2 days in a row. Look for different things each time. We do Bill's story in a day. We do There's a Solution in 2 days. I like to break that up. We do More About Alcoholism in a day. We do We Agnostics in a day. We do How It Works through Step 3 in 2 days. And, then we're on to 4. And, I'd like to see him do that in 3 days total. And then, we get 5, depends on whether they, how quick we can get the 5 set up. So, that's a day or 2 days. And then 6 and 7 are an hour. And 8 is a day, 9's a day. 10 and 11, we slow down because we're going to live there for the rest of our lives. So we go through those a bunch of different times and have them look for, have them go through and highlight the promises, have them go through and highlight the actions, have them highlight the prayers, have them highlight the, because I want to break it down. I want them to be 11. And then 12, by the time we get to 12, then we start sponsoring. But we do at least working with others for, 5 or 6 days, that read 5 or 6 pages at a time. Because I think there's a lot to digest. in there. And most people, if you do it too quickly, you read it all at once, they're not going to hold on to it. You know, if you get somebody with a real sharp mind, they might. But that's kind of the framework that I use. And then I use a lot of podcasts. I use a lot of special editions from here, especially Harlan's, some of my own. I use Julie R. out of California's podcast for step 6 and 5, 6 and 7. I use a lot of the podcasts from here with each one of those suggested podcasts. I hope I didn't over-answer that, but that's how it looks.
Very thorough. Thanks, Craig. Thanks, Kristen R., for your question this morning. Jason KP, followed by Tamara C.
Good morning. Jason KP, recovered compulsive eater and bulimic here in Pennsylvania. Good hearing you, Craig and Melanie. So when I think of and I hear these metaphors of don't fight, and we hear words like acceptance is the answer and surrender, sometimes I think of states of inaction. And then I read the book and we hear, you know, a program of vigorous action and action, action, action. You know, so I hear on one hand, only God can do this. And on the other hand, I need to go to any lengths. So can you start to try to rectify those two things? Where is the intense, effortful action, and maybe even struggling in the correct way, like struggling to run to that bus instead of fighting the grizzly bear, if that metaphor helps? Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you, Jason. Surrender, it doesn't mean laying down and holding up a white flag. Surrender means taking the next right action. Surrender means that I do those things that the program asks me to do. I do those things that are demanded for recovery. You know, work the steps. Get a sponsor, be a sponsor. Surrender looks like action, but it looks like the prescribed actions. It looks like the actions that are laid out for me in the book and by the program. And so it's good. It's a good for you to draw that out. It's not. Surrender isn't laying down and letting the grizzly bear maul me. Surrender is getting away from the grizzly bear so it can't maul me. And surrender is letting somebody else fight the grizzly bear. Let somebody is powerful enough to fight it, to keep it away from me, let them do it. So surrender means letting God fight it where it needs to be fought. Good question.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Jason KP, for your question. Tamara C., you're up next, followed by Lee.
Hey, this is Tamara C. Thank you, Melanie, for your service. Thank you, Craig, so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. I'm really helped with the concept of, like, stepping aside and letting a higher power fight the fight for me. You focused on the food, doing that with the food. I think where I don't find it easy to do that is with, like, my character defects. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I'm gonna push Julie R's podcast on again that I love so much. I think it's titled The Powerful Hour, but it moves from steps 5. Through 6 and 7, and 6 and 7 say, you know, that we became ready to have God remove all those defects of character, and then we humbly ask God to remove those defects of character. And what that tells me is that I'm powerless over the removal of my character defects as well. You know, I always tell this story. We had a woman here in town who. And wonderful woman, and a wonderful message, but she taught what she had people do for step 6 and 7 was made up poker chips, and on one side of the poker chip was your character defect, and then the other side was the opposite. So if you had sloppiness on one side and neatness on the other, or whatever the character defect was and whatever the opposite was, and every day you drew a poker chip, and that day you worked on that character defect, and you did this for years on end, and that's all well and good, but it flies in the face of the wording of the steps. You know, we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. You know, and I think that the removal of those character defects, that the work God does on us, happens in steps 10, 11, and 12. When I face a step 10 and I make a call on a step 10, what am I inventorying? Where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Where was I resentful? Where was I fearful? You know, in other words, what were my character defects? And when I do a step 11 and I answer those 12 questions that are outlined in the big book in step 11, what am I doing? I'm looking at my character defects. You know, I'm facing my character defects. And when I work with others, I'm working on my big character defect, which is selfishness, self-centeredness. You know, that's the root of so much of my character defects is my obsession with myself. And so by working step 12, by sponsoring, by working and being of service to others, like I'm supposed to do in step 12, I'm working on that character defect, the self-centeredness. So in 6 and 7, when we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings, our character defects, and then we move into 8 and 9, where we have to go and make amends for what our character defects taught, you know, where we've harmed others because of our character defects. And then we go through 10, 11, and 12, where every day we're faced with our character defects. I think that's where the magic happens, that in completing the steps. And I think that's why we don't spend very long on 6 and 7, why there's only 2 paragraphs in the big book. And one of those paragraphs is the 7-step prayer.
Thank you, Tamara, for your question this morning. Next up is
yes,
VH, followed by Paul.
Well, good morning, and thanks so much, Craig F. This is Lee H. in Tennessee. I think Jason K. hit on something that I wanted to ask. I'm just jotting down crazily everything because I think this is so good for people who have been through the steps several times. And the part that I think does just kind of trigger me is just this idea of giving up, because then it's like, what do you fill that gap with? It took me a while to figure out I'm not being punished by giving it up. I'm gaining something. And so that's the question I'm going to ask is, so, you know, after we've been through the steps and we're giving up these things that trigger us, are we moving closer towards what our higher power has for us? I mean, what does that safety look like after we've gotten back on the bus and, you know, the grizzly bear is sort of growling but not going to harm us anymore? So what does it look like on the bus? Like, what does safety look like for you? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a deep question. You know, I want to point out that the first thing I did when I got back on that bus, besides getting my dad on the bus, was I stood as close to the door as I could at the top of the steps and helped those other people, the other geriatrics that were having trouble climbing the steps into the bus. I helped pull them up into the bus in a hurry. In other words, one thing that happens when you get to that point of recovery is that you're obligated to help others get there as well. And I think that was the first thing. I didn't have time to set and be to be in a celebratory mood, or to be, you know, to just sigh of relief until everybody else was safe as well. And then the other thing, what's that look like, is that, you know, and I'm going to say this because it's not really, I'm not really there yet, you know, and that is that it allows us to live a fuller life outside of program. You know, my life outside of program is not as empty as it once was, but not as full as it could be. Part of the reason for that is some medical conditions. You know, I have knees that need to be replaced, and the doctor won't quite do that yet. I have some more weight yet to come off. You know, I've lost 160 pounds, but I
Craig, we lost you there. Let's see what's going on. Craig, can you come back on with Star One, or did we lose you? Let's see if I can unmute you here. Okay. Craig, are you unmuted now? Craig, are you still there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yep.
My earphones died. Sorry.
Oh, okay. We were just talking about knee surgery.
I don't know how much you heard of that, but life opens
right
up outside of program as well. And, you know, it's just opening up for me. I know that some of the people that know me here hear me say this. I think they'd say, well, you're not there yet. Well, no, I'm not there yet. But it's getting there. You know, I can see the vista opening in front of me. Life becomes larger again. And that is, if not a promise of the program, it should be.
Thank you, Lee H., for your question.
Is that sufficient? It was a great question.
It sounded wonderful to me, if I may add. thank you, Lee H., for your question. Paul P., are you ready? Would you like to ask your question now?
Paul P. from Rhode Island. Thank you, Greg, for your service. Hello, Melanie. Thank you for your service, Melanie. Greg, thank you for your wonderful share. That bear is really on my back, and I really like to get it off of it. So my question is, I'm good with sugar, and I'm good with most of my alcoholic foods, but curb my desire for the rest of my foods? Thank you.
Well, do you have a nutritionist?
Yes, I do.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Hang on just a second, Paul. Paul, hang on just a second. Don't mute yourself just yet. Craig, can you be heard now? I mean, are you hearing us now?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. We got just a little bit of a technical thing going on here. Craig, are you clear?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, good deal. Okay. Paul, don't go anywhere. Stay unmuted.
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes, Greg, I do have a nutritionist.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that that what you ask is probably best worked out.
Nutritionist, one that understands and making sure that you've given up everything you identify.
The audible that you've just gone to, Craig, is a little bit hard to hear. It's a little more distant. Is that
something that can be shifted, or?
Hello?
Hi there. This is better. Yeah, that's better. The audio is better. Yep, we can hear you better. Keep talking to me, Craig, to make sure that we're connected here.
All right. My earphones have both died, both sets. I said that I think that the question that you asked is probably best worked out with a nutritionist that understands this disease. It's not something that I feel comfortable addressing in this forum.
Sounds good. Thanks. Thanks, Paul P., for your question. Next up, Felicia S., are you ready to ask your question?
Oh, well.
Felicia S., are you ready
for your question? Yeah. Felicia S., from New Jersey. Thank you so much all for your service, and thank you, Kirk, for your share. My question is, as it relates, as you've been separated out of the food for a while, right, as new potential, you know, things that, as you said, you start finding sexy, is there any prayer or spiritual part of your routine that you use to sort of check the sanity of that? Are you on the spiritual beam as it relates to those things? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I don't know of any particular set prayer, but it certainly would be a good thing to pray about. And thank you for the question.
He's breaking up.
Craig, we're still having a difficulty. I think your audio is shifting from maybe the earbuds to your. I'm not sure what we're doing, but I can't hear you very well now.
Side prayer is that this idea of having a sponsor.
Craig, can you hear me? Craig, can you hear me?
Program that we reach out and discuss. You know, it's like they hold up a mirror and help us to see what we're seeing. You know, that God and skin idea that keeps people. Not just prayer where we don't hear audible voices.
Can't understand him.
We're taking care of it. Thank you so much. We understand. Thank you.
Can't hear him.
If we can keep everybody else muted, please, while Craig's speaking, we're trying to be in contact with him. Thank you so much. We're doing our best back here.
So they know a lot more about food than I do. And I can talk to them and say, you know, I've been struggling here. I've been thinking about this, or, you know, considering that. Good feedback. You don't have to accept everything I tell you, but then again, certainly help me take a better look. Job is. So, sponsor, nutritionist, other fellows, as well as. Does that answer your question?
Craig, can you hear me? Craig, this is Melanie. Can you hear me? Craig, can you hear me?
Yes. Check your... No, I can.
No, I can. Okay. You're fading in and out. I don't know if your audio is trying to shift from one means of being able to communicate to another, but the last answer that you gave
folks were not able to hear that, and you weren't able to hear me. So we won't go back over that at all. I just want you to be aware of that. I'm going to move on to Diane G. from Canada with her question right now. I just wanted you to be mindful that there's something on that other end that's happening. So, Diane, are you ready, too, to be able to ask your question?
Yes. Good morning. I am Diane G., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Canada. Melanie, thank you for your service. And Craig, thank you for your powerful share. My question is, how would you describe the difference between working the program and living the steps and living in the steps?
I don't know. That's a, I suppose, a good question. Working the program is living in the steps. So, I mean,
we begin by working the steps formally, but it's a lifetime.
Amen. Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Diane G., for your question. You know, we do have time if we want to work through this still for a couple more questions before we run out. Craig, are you up to it?
I'm up to it if we can keep connecting.
Let's see if we can do this. If it gets too wonky, we'll just move on. Anyone out there, I still have a question for Craig this morning.
Christina J.
And then who? Somebody J.
Christina J.
Christina J. Okay, let's go with those two. Hey, Pete, your question this morning, please.
Hey, Melanie, good morning. Thank you for your service. Craig, thanks for your share. I loved it. I loved how you talked about helping the elders back onto the bus, like that being the essential part, you know, how working with others. So my question is this. On page 63, it says that we will find that we will feel a new power flow in. What does that mean to you? What's it flowing into?
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, it means that God's coming in. You know, the new power that comes in is God. We've talked about this new dependence. We're now at step three. You know, our Maker, as we understood Him, God off myself. And so the new power that's flowing in is the power of God. And, so we move from self-dependence to God-dependence with that step. That's step three. We're now dependent on God.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Pete P., for your question. Next question, Christina J. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your service. And Craig, what a wonderful topic, really button pusher as far as food and stuff. I don't know if you covered this earlier, but they send you their daily food. And if you don't, how do you kind of keep tabs gently with them on physical recovery and as kind of a indicator, if they need physical recovery, as an indicator that their food is good and blah, blah, blah? So do you check in with them on how's your physical recovery coming? I mean, that's a question I gently ask. I allow people to kind of tell me whether they want me to send me their food to be accountable or not. I'm not a judge and jury, but I do watch for potential triggers if they're new. So anything on that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. My sponsor asked me to weigh once a week and stand on the scales, and I report him my progress each week. And there, you know, that's the best gauge for me because I'm still in a weight loss process. Some of my sponsees, weight's not the issue. Some of them have shed all the weight that they need to shed and are at maintenance, and that's not the issue. But the ones where that is an issue, I oftentimes ask them, just like my sponsor asked me, to weigh once a week and let me know how it's going. And
so don't ask for their food.
No. Yeah. I ask them to get a nutritionist or get a food plan, and I suggest that they weigh and measure. That's it.
Perfect. I love it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christina J., for your question this morning. Let's take another one, another question or two. Anybody out there with a burning desire? Bonnie B. from Florida? Let's go with that, Bonnie B., and see how we could do with time. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you so much for your service.
Yeah, and thank you, Craig. It was an amazing message today. So appreciate it. So the question I have is, when you've sponsored someone and they've gone through the steps, because you had to initially get a sponsor, do you continue to touch base with them, like indefinitely? Are you their sponsor? And then if you are, what does that look like? And if you aren't, then how do you encourage them? And thanks.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I ask my sponsor, if you're going to call me your sponsor, then I'd like to hear from you every day. And sometimes it's a brief call. Quite often it's just, you know, a few minutes. And I always end by reminding them to pray up. And, if there's something bothering them, then they call me. If they have a tenth step, a lot of times they call me. But, if I'm your sponsor, then let's talk. My sponsor asked me to call him every day, and so I ask my sponsees to call me every day. You know, my sponsor asked me basically for my plan of action. He reminds me that I have a progressive disease that got worse overnight, and what am I going to do today to stem this tide? And so I tell him, you know. And that's a good thing for me because it reminds me of the things I need to do that day. Thank you for the question. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you for the question, Bonnie B. Anyone else with a question this morning? Star one.
Kind of yet to R.
Okay. Your question, go ahead.
Hi, this is Hanietta. I'm grateful to be here. I'm a compulsive eater. Russ, you were talking at once before that you said there were things that you were wanting to do better, more physical things, but you can't because you have bad knees, and that you were you had lost 160 pounds, but and that's when you were cut off. And I was wondering what the butt was about. What
are you wondering? What are the other things I want to do?
No, you said, but you have some more to lose and some other things. I guess you're going to say some other things you had to do, fix yourself, before you could do some of the physical things you wanted to do.
I was
wondering what those were.
Well, the weight loss is part of. I mean, I like to dance. I haven't danced in years. You know, I like to, you know, upset the animal rights people on the line. But I'm a hunter, and I haven't hunted in years. And you know, I can't even get out and go fishing like I used to do yet. Those things are opening up to me, you know, as I lose weight and as I get more mobile. I'm hoping that I can get back to those things: dancing, fishing, and hunting.
Thank you for your question, Hanietta. That would be the last question for today for our presentation this morning. Thank you so much for your presentation, Craig. It was very, very good. Very good. I appreciate it very much. So, again, you offered so much of yourself, and we will close within our usual fashion by reading from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you